Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
In today's episode, I'll be interviewing Dave Holt. He is the owner of a property management company in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a past NARPM president, and we are on location in Las Vegas at the NARPM Broker Owner Conference. It's a great opportunity to interview Dave. One of the things we're going to talk about that's very important for the listeners is how he does investments and some of the techniques that he uses to get investment properties. Because what we're talking about are single family homes. When you manage single family homes, well, you have the opportunity to, guess what, invest in them. And Dave's going to talk us through that. He's also a co-founder of the National Property Management Network with us, to where we provide products and services for other property managers. So it's been a great interview with Dave. I'm very impressed with some of the techniques he can bring to the table. So I encourage the listeners to listen to this and go out there and apply what he's talking about, because he's been very successful in his investing strategies. So let's have a listen. And Dave, thanks for joining me here on the Property Management Mastermind Show. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we are on location. We are in Vegas. We're at the Broker Owner Conference here. We're having a great conference so far. I'm excited to get down to see the vendors here later today, to kind of see what they got going on. But thank you for taking the time to meet me and go through with this podcast episode, because you have something very unique that I want to share with the audience. And we're going to kick this around for a little bit. Essentially, your claim to fame, in my opinion, other than you've been the past president of, say, of NARPM, you've been teaching risk mitigation for NARPM for years. Your claim to fame and what you've helped me understand in certain aspects is investing for property managers. And this is what we're going to go in through. And people think, well, what is that? What is investing for property managers? So investing, in my opinion, is where we manage homes and bump into opportunities where we can take on that home. So let's kick it off. What do you think?
Absolutely, Brad. I mean, when you think about it, we have a unique opportunity because we're doing the hardest part of investing, other than if you're just flipping properties. But the hardest part is the property management part. And so we already have that built into the equation. So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you already know what the numbers are. You know what the rents are going to be. You know the market. So there's no guessing. It takes a big part of that out of it. So your portfolio, and I want to make sure that the audience understands where you're coming from, because you've done over 75 deals, and they've been generated through or around your property management business. Is that correct?
That's correct, for the most part.
Yeah, and you currently hold over 30 homes in your personal portfolio, and you manage a portfolio of roughly 400 homes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that's a great base to start from. And I wanted to get that out there right away, because people need to understand you're just not reading a book and then doing this and claiming to be the expert. You've been doing this for how long?
25 years, yeah. Longer. I mean, I started out in my career managing for HUD. So my first properties that I invested were HUD properties back in the mid 80s.
Now, were those like the non-qualifying assumptions?
Right. I mean, you really, to buy a property back then. I mean, you had to get traditional financing, but keep in mind, traditional financing back then was a lot easier to get.
I know my mentor in San Antonio, Tony Forcione, he was big into real estate in the 80s, and he was 80s and 90s, and he was getting those non-qualifying assumptions from the VA, like giving away candy. And he was just taking them over, and he might be at a loss, you know, as far as rent upside down. But 20 years later, they all flipped. All the, you know, the rents all went up. The mortgages went down, and he had basically zero skin in the game to take those on, other than maybe being $100 upside down each month. But that quickly flipped. And so, man, wouldn't that be a good time to be in real estate?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. And you see those cycles going on. And the beauty that we're in is that we're almost recession proof in property management, because we get the different clients. But the same thing with investing. I mean, you might think, oh, it's a great market. Owners are going to want to sell. There's not going to be any opportunities. And I have bought a lot of properties on the upswing. I mean, it's surprising. And you just really don't know people's situations. And it's always a good time to be investing. So
good stuff. Great stuff. So more in the intro. So you're in Minneapolis. Make sure everybody understands that. You love to ski and you love to do fun things up there. So let's talk about a little bit more. We made some notes here. We're going to go through these. So what do you think most of the people that are coming to you out of the portfolio are going to be? Are they going to be more of the reluctant landlords? Are they going to be the I must sell right now so I can buy another home? Kind of talk me through where you've been able to pick these up.
Yeah, and in our market, and this is different, obviously, throughout the country, but regardless of where you are, you're always going to get a handful, if not more. In our market, we get a lot of reluctant landlords. They would prefer to sell, but because of situations, I mean, it could be anything from, you know, they bought the property wrong, even though there's appreciation going on, they're still not back to a positive value. And so there are situations where they are having to leave a job transfer very quickly, don't want to go through the whole process and the time that it might take to do a traditional sale. I mean, all sorts of situations. I mean, it can be divorce situations, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you just don't know. When an owner is coming to us for management, most property managers are assuming traditional property management. I mean, they're really not understanding what the owner is looking for and what their intent is, because it might be to sell. It might be they want to have it as an investment property. But if they're given different options, they may pick some of these other options.
So they need to ask the question, why did you contact me? What can we do for you? What are you wanting to do?
That's exactly right. I mean, what is it that you're looking to be doing with your property? I mean, what is your intent? What is your long-term goals with the property? And try to understand what they're trying to do. And then you can kind of craft your different options, not just traditional property management. We have about 5 different options that we give owners when they come to us for service.
Yeah, let's dig into that here in a minute. But the first thing we want to go in through is the where. A lot of people are going to ask, well, where do you get the leads? How do you get introduced to these folks? And so to help you answer this, I'm going to give some background on Bigger Pockets and investing. And what we've been seeing in the investor community in San Antonio is there's a lot of off-market chasing. And the off-market chasing means the things that are not on the multiple listing service, or they're not on Craigslist, for example. They're off-market to where you're going to find them through word of mouth. And you have now hundreds, potentially thousands of investors sending out letters, doing Craigslist chasing, doing, you know, drive for dollars, as they call it, where they're driving around neighborhoods looking for sale by owners. So to answer the kind of the questions on what people are going to want to know, Dave, where do you get a lot of these leads?
Yeah. Well, you see it all over the place. I mean, everybody's run into the bandit signs where, you know, we buy houses, you know, all cash, all those type of things. And those can work. Obviously, people wouldn't continue to do them if they didn't work. But again, we're in a unique position. We're already managing property. So I started there. I started with my current owners.
Yeah. And plus your new owners coming in.
And new owners. That's right.
Yeah,
as I said, every new owner that comes in, we're talking to them and saying we have several different options, actually 5 different options.
That's a good point on a best practice we want to bring up. People may be looking only at new owners coming in, but don't forget about your existing owners. How many times have they come to us and said, hey, I'm going to sell, and Sally, the realtor down the street, is going to help me sell the home that I met at church? And it just drives you insane to hear that, because it's really your fault. It's the management company's fault that they have to secure those owners and let them know that, one, they can help them, two, they can do a sale for them, and three, they can maybe provide them with other options. You know, and this is something that we've developed is a third option. And we'll talk about your options as well. But we also have the same kind of options. So let's get into those options. So we meet with somebody, we talk to them. They say, you know what, Dave, I'd rather just cut and run. So let's talk about some of the techniques you might propose to somebody like that.
Right. Again, they're coming to us and they're thinking traditional property management.
Are they?
Typically, yes. I mean, they're coming to the property management.
They're coming to you for help.
You're coming to the property management company.
And we forget that there might be other options. You know, I've walked into management appointments, as you have, saying, we're going to rent this home for $1,200, period. And that's all I'm thinking is we're renting, we're going to manage it because I want to build the company. I want to management. And the owner might be thinking, I just want out of it. I don't care what, I talked to a realtor, they said I'm upside down. You're my next best guess, so you tell me what you can do.
That's right, and it can go both ways, as you're saying. I mean, the property manager might be going in there only thinking they want professional property management, the traditional property management services, when in fact, and that's why you ask and get get some clarity on what their objective is with the property, because then you can get into all these other options if you elect to.
So let's dive into it. So, okay. All right, Dave, I'm Mr. Owner. Mr. Owner says, I just want to cut and run. I'm moving to Dallas because Dallas is a great city. They have the Dallas Cowboys there. I'm moving to Dallas and you can sell my home in Minneapolis or burn it, or I don't care what you do with it. Give me your best suggestions.
Yeah. And so the first thing I'm trying to do is I'd look at it and say, if you're looking to be buying the or selling the property, I can buy it for the same net that you'd get selling traditionally, but I can close whenever you want to close. I mean, you don't have to go through the hassle. You don't have to go through all of the negotiations. You don't have to go through the potential repairs or city inspections or whatever you might, buyer inspection, repairs, those type of things. I'll buy it as is. We can close within about 10 days. And I'll give you the same net that you'd get selling traditionally.
Let's not skip over that because we want to elongate what that means. So everybody listening understands what that means. And I feel that we can talk numbers in this scenario. We're not necessarily on the stage for...
Well, it's really more of a formula per se. So it depends on your market, but every market has some sort of... there's the list price, but then there's the actual sales price. And so you just really need to figure out... depending on your market and the time.
That is that percentage of what we call original list price to sales price is typically a 2-4% discount. It's not a discount. It's a reduction.
So it's just reality.
So someone's got a $200,000 home list price and a buyer may come in and offer them 190 and they settle at 195. And so there's a $5,000 discount, which is what, 2.5%? Right? And my math is right. So there's the discount from original list price to sales price, 2.5%. That happens every day in real estate.
It does. And so you're taking those averages. And so I would say the traditional sales price from the list is 4%.
Okay.
Let's take that as a scenario. Well, now what is the traditional realtor broker commission?
We call it 6%.
Okay. Right? Let's say 6%.
Say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you're to 10. Is it typical in your market to have seller concessions?
All the time.
Okay. So you'd factor that in.
And I would use a figure of $1,000.
I would use a percentage.
Okay.
Okay. So I would take another percentage, like 1%.
That's fair.
Okay. So I'm looking at that. I'd also look at improvements, like buyer suggested improvements. Because in my market, almost 100% of the time, the buyer's having a buyer inspection on the property. All right. Okay. Is that pretty typical?
Yeah.
Okay. So it is that inspector's job to be finding something. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. If they don't, they feel like they haven't done their job. Right. And if they find something, of course, it's all CYA drill. They just want to disclose and say, get this reinspected by a plumber because I don't know what I'm talking about, even though I'm licensed. And yeah,
you're right. So there is always something that they're going to find, and that is incumbent upon the seller to be fixing that, because the buyer is going to go, oh, look at all these things. We want this done. And as part of the purchase agreement, there's that inspection contingency. Mm-hmm. And so they'll say, well, we want you to do this, that, and the other thing. And most of the time they'll negotiate depending on what it is, but there's almost always some kind of concession there too, that the seller is going to have to do. All right. So we'll take a percentage there.
1% or
say 1%. I mean, you can adjust depending on your market and what's pretty typical.
I know where you're going with this and I love it because it's going to illustrate the point. And I think the audience is going to figure out he's exactly right. I'm not going to go offer them retail, and let's dive into holding costs.
There you go. Yeah. So, and that is the very next one. So you have a holding cost. Now, if they have their property currently leased out, there may be minimal holding costs. All right. But that's usually not the case when a new owner is coming to you. They're living in the property. They're going to be vacating. They may have already purchased another home, and there's going to be some vacancy in the property, mm-hmm. and therefore some holding costs. Mm-hmm. And so you factor that in as well. And that could be 1-3%.
Well, let's do some hard math on that. So let's say it's a $200,000 home. Let's say there's a $1,500 mortgage. Is that a good figure for your market?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Because it's easy
math. If you're talking PITI, the principal interest taxes and insurance.
The homeowner is writing a check for every month. And that's before utilities.
That's right. So utilities, lawn care, snow removal, depending on your climate. Right.
So if we take in utilities and let's surround it to $2,000 a month holding cost for a $200,000 home, what's the average days that they're going to hold that for a vacant home?
Well, probably 90 days.
I thought 90 as well. So 3 months times $2,000. That's $6,000 in holding costs right there. So now we're talking about a reduction.
So you're another 3%.
Another 3%. Oh, you want to use the percentage, Mr. Smart Guy.
I do, because it helps when you're looking at percentages, you can always put that into the equations, again, depending on your market.
So let's run through these percentages. So we had a 4%, or is that equaling to 6?
No, the 4% was the difference between your listing and your sales.
Got it. So we have a 4% factor from listing price to sales price.
And then you had your realtor 6% commission.
6% commission.
Mm-hmm. To give you your 10.
A 1% seller's concession, then a 1% buyer's improvement, which is like inspection fallout. So now we're up to 15%.
Well, you're at 12%.
3, 4, 5.
Oh, yeah. And then you're 3%. You're at 15.
And holding costs. Mm-hmm. So we have a total of 15% off the potential list price. So the top of my head, that is $30,000. So you have a $200,000 listing, take $30,000 of costs that it's costing that seller to sell that home with everything included. So your net you're getting at is $170,000. That's where you would go into them and say, look, I can give you $170,000 and here's why. And you go through the numbers with them and I can close within a week or two. You have no headaches from there. You can cut and run. Take it from there.
Yeah, and that's kind of my maximum allowable offer. They call it MAO. So the MAO, M-A-O, maximum allowable offer, all right? But what's not in that formula is profit. So that's where I can be a little creative. Because depending on the property, it might be a property where I can do some pretty significant improvements. Now I have a general contractor's license. I have a maintenance division within my property management company.
Which most people do.
Well,
most
people would have some sort of maintenance, yes. Subcontractors. I mean, they have that ability to do these things and probably cheaper than the owner would. So what you'd look at is what kind of improvements could you be doing to the property to increase that potential sale for you on the back end? All right. And so I don't put that into the formula. I'm just keeping that in the back of my mind as far as addition.
Because as realtors, we have to disclose to them, look, we think your home is worth $200,000. In my good conscience, I would do that, presenting that to a potential seller. Because they could take that and say they felt used because we didn't tell them the full potential retail value. And I want to sleep at night. So I'm going to tell them, look, I think your home is worth $200,000, but you have to maybe put 10 grand into it to get there.
That's right.
And you're going to incur all these costs. And so a good net for you might be $160,000.
It could
be. We talked about 170, but don't forget the 10 grand I need you to put into new carpets and paint and fixings and this and that.
Yeah, and that really depends on your market. And you're exactly right. You might have that into that formula because they would have to do these things, these improvements, just to sell it.
Yep. So we get to those numbers and we get to that point where you talk to the seller, you let them know this is the situation with the numbers. Now let's talk about those five potential options for them.
Okay. Well, first of all, there's one more thing. There's profit.
Okay.
Okay. Now there's profit in there for you. Now, what I tell my sellers, I said, look, I can give you the same net that you'd get listing and selling traditionally, but if I'm getting the same amount that you would, why would I even do this? So there has to be a little something in this for me to get this done quickly and so forth. And I might factor in with them a profit margin, and that can vary. It could be a dollar amount.
Okay.
You know, it could be a percentage, whatever it might be.
Used.
Right. But it really, I'm just looking at this in order to figure out what is my MAO, what's my maximum allowable offer where I'm not going to, it's going to work for me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where I'm not going to have to come out of pocket to make, if something isn't going to work. Now I'm looking at now what kind of improvements can I do? What's happening in the market? I generally do not use appreciation because as we've all experienced in the crash, if you start using appreciation, you can get stung, you know, in your formula. So I don't use that type of condition. It's gravy if things are happening, but you don't know if you're going to be taking this property and turning it right away, flipping it, or if you're going to be holding it long-term and what the market's going to be.
Yeah, you don't want to be caught in musical chairs where people are banking on appreciation, going around and around, and when the music stops, they're left with the home midstream of an upward tick, and then they're...
Yeah, but the one thing that you can't underestimate is the hassle factor and the emotion that goes into selling a property, mm-hmm. All right, and the uncertainty that goes along with that. So you have an owner that is looking to sell. They're already stressed because they they got a divorce, they got a job transfer. I mean, there's a lot of stress, and now they're having to worry about selling the home. All right. Now, if you come in with a solution to get this done and close when they want to close, I mean, that's huge. So what kind of factor is that? Yeah. So sometimes I'll always talk about that and either use, well, the profit side of things or the terms, because there are different ways that I'm going to want to see how I could buy this property from them.
The key to this formula too, and we need to mention this as well, is there's got to be no lien on the property that's going to overshadow that. You know, we got down to a number of let's say 160, round figure. Well, if they owe 190, now we're going into a different conversation, right?
That's right. But that's a different strategy. I bought properties that are underwater.
Oh, okay.
For the seller. And so they're thinking, how am I going to do this? So I'll just give you an example. There was a property that I bought last year that the owner had some foundation issues. Hard to sell. He had an offer on it before. They did a buyer inspection. They were looking at the foundation and go, no, I don't want this property. And so they backed out of the deal. He has to be disclosing this in
forever. Yeah.
That was and every buyer is just going, nope, nope, nope. But not one of those buyers looked at what would it cost to fix, cure this foundation issue. So I went in and looked at it and had a professional look at it, and it was $7,000. In his situation, he couldn't sell it. So he had, and it was vacant. He had already moved. So he had all of this holding cost. He owed more on the property than it was worth that he would be able to sell it in this condition. He would have to come to closing with $30,000 in order to sell this property. And he had no idea how long it would take to even do that. And so he'd have all these holding costs. And so I was hitting the emotional side. I said, so for you, it'd be nice to have some finality and some certainty on this whole process. Well, what if I could come up with the same term, same buyout? You're still coming to closing with 30, because you'd be doing that in a traditional sale anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's still happening. And we can structure something where you have a finite period of time of holding, because you're going to have that anyway. So we negotiated. And I said, I'll buy it for the same net. You're going to come to closing with the 30, but that 30 is coming to me. And then you're going to be making the next 6 months of mortgage payments. Now, if I can sell it quicker, because I'm going to come in there and I'm going to do improvements and I'm going to try to sell it. But we're in the fall right now. Selling in the Minnesota in the wintertime is not ideal. And so I was saying, you're going to have that same market conditions. And so I'm estimating it's going to take 6 months. If it takes three, well, then you only owe 3 months of holding costs. So we structured a deal. We closed. He gave me $30,000 at closing, which covered all of my rehab costs. All right. And then he was covering the next 6 months of payments, which covered all of my holding time. And cured the foundation issue and did a lot of other things. I totally gutted and rehabbed the kitchen, a bathroom, and so forth, and really improved the property. And then we sold it. And so I was able to negotiate and get him what he needed, and he felt comfortable. And that's really an important thing, is this isn't a win-lose scenario. You always need to be structuring a win-win situation. Now, for a lot of people, if I said, well, he had to pay me 30 and covering 6 months of payment, they'd go, well, that's a lose for him. Well, no, it wasn't. It was actually a comfort to him, because he was going to be having that anyway in a traditional sale. All right. But he had some finality, and he knew that what his costs were going to be, definitely. And so it was a great situation. He loved it. I loved it. We moved on. It was great. So I'm looking at, first, what can I be doing to help them out and purchase the property? All right. So this was, I guess, what you'd call a flip situation. All right. I'm buying the property, I'm improving the property, and then I'm selling it, and generally a higher price. So,
how much did you make on that at the end?
I knew you were going to ask that.
You were just waiting for me. I'm trying to give you hand signals and kicking you, and
well, and I didn't want to. Yeah, I mean, that one in particular, and again, keep in mind, there's nothing down.
You could say, you know, you did well. Yeah. You know, you could say, I did okay, or I barely broke even and I lost my...
My profit was over 30, put it that way.
Great.
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right. And so it was a six-month deal. But again, I got all my rehab costs and my whole holding costs covered by the seller.
That's awesome. And you've been doing numbers of those. You've had over 75 of those. So that's a great example. And I loved it because you dove in and told us the numbers. And I really appreciate that.
So let's take a scenario where, because I'm not always trying to do the flipping, because keep in mind that if you're flipping, you're done. Your investment's over. And so the buying and holding, especially for property managers, is a great strategy because we have the built-in property management already. You know, so I'm first trying to see, can I buy and hold this property? Now, how can I do this without a huge outlay of cash? And most investors will say, well, I need to go to the bank. I need to go to a hard money lender. I need to get the financing from somewhere. And typically, that would be, I never go to the bank. I did initially way back when, but now you have debt. And I don't like to have debt on the property. I'm granted there's going to be a mortgage payment, and that is debt, but that's a different type. All right. So I'm not paying additional charges and percentages and fees to a bank or a hard money lender on this. So I'm using the seller basically as the bank. And you don't know their situation. They may own the property free and clear, or with very, very limited amount left on their mortgage payment. Most of them have a mortgage. Most of them are into that mortgage for a number of years. So after about 5 years of a loan, you know, you're starting to really pay, and this is a 30-year amortized loan, you're starting to pay more and more principal reduction, all right, on that. So depending on what the terms of the mortgage are, could be a big favor for me. So I'm looking at those terms, and I might be a little more creative with the purchase price and give them that if I can take over the mortgage. All right. So they call it subject to, buying subject to. So what I'm going to do is say, look, would you be first willing to sell this for the same amount that you would net listing and selling traditionally? We go through the whole formula, the net sheet, and say, yeah, I'd do that. He said, well, as an investor, I can't go out and get traditional financing. I just can't do it. And even those who can, there's going to be a limit, a number that you can.
Usually 10.
Maybe.
With bank financing.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a finite amount that you can even purchase. So I say, look, I will be able to do this, to buy it for the same amount that you'd net listing and selling traditionally. I can close when you want to close, but there's one thing that I need back from you. I need the ability to be able to take over your payments. All right. And so you can do that a number of different ways. Some owners might be willing to actually transfer the deed, and some may not. So they're going to be doing a contract for deed.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, there's like five or six different terms for this. I'm going to let you use what you understand.
Yeah, I mean, deed of trust. I mean, it's
correct.
All kinds of different
things.
It just really depends on their comfort level. I'm always trying to get the deed if I can get the deed. All right. But a contract for deed can work as well. And that's fine. But my objective is to be able to borrow their existing financing. And they're going to say, well, how can you do that? You can't do that. If I'm selling the property, there's a due on sale clause. Well, that's true. But understand that the due on sale clause is not a automatic, that this has to happen if you sell the property. It's just a right to that lender. It gives that lender the right to call the loan due. All right. Now, I don't know too many lenders that are calling a performing asset due.
Yeah, we have to be careful here because we could say that, oh, they'll never call it due, but we can't.
And that's exactly right.
So everyone out there listening is going to have to make their own decision, talk to their own counsel about what that due on sale clause means for you. Now, for me, I'm on the same page you are. I don't think there's any way. There is a way, but the chances of them calling a performing note due are slim. And I don't even want to throw a percentage out there or try to, but I've never heard of anyone being called due.
Well, I mean, it can happen, but even so, let's say it does happen. You just go ahead and sell it.
And if they were to call it due, exactly, they just sell it outright or get it refinanced. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they go and get some traditional financing and get it taken care of. It's not illegal is the point.
Correct.
It's done all the time. I mean, you can take over a property subject to the existing financing.
Yeah. A lot of times you can do a Google search for an attorney in your local area and find a subject to contract. You can work with them. They can help you draw up the terms. So let me talk through kind of the things that we've done, because I've done some of these as well. And the way we structure them, I think that's going to be interesting for everybody to hear. And you probably do a lot of the same thing. So this is going to be some good, like we do this or we don't do this. So we set up that subject to situation, subject to deal. We go to an attorney, they draft the contract, we take over their loan. Well, what does that mean? Meaning we have a third party servicing company that pays the mortgage on that owner's behalf, and we pay the third party servicing company. And I do that as a feel good for the owner. I do not have to do that. And you probably say that's dumb because you can save X number of dollars. And you may just pay directly. What do you guys do?
Well, we do pay directly, and we get the permission from the owner, and we have certain forms that we have the owner sign that gives us the permission to talk to their lender, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. We get them to give us online access to the loan so we can download statements and so forth. We have them change the statement mailing address to us. If they are not willing to do that, then they need to send us a copy or give us online access so we can download a copy, because we always want to be current on the mortgage. Mm-hmm. But we also put in, for their comfort, into our agreements that if I don't make payments, if I ever become more than 1 month behind, I give the property back.
Yeah, and they can foreclose so easily.
And they can, because a contract for deed is contract law.
Right.
I mean, if it's done in that way, and it's probably different in depending on the state you're in. In Minnesota, it's a 60-day cancellation of the contract.
Right.
You know, so it's not the whole foreclosure process. You know, so you can give them a little bit more peace of mind.
Now, we chose to use the third-party servicing company just as a feel-good for that particular owner, because I actually drew up a program. You know, here are the steps. You know, this is I call it the third option. And because obviously the options we would talk through would be first, property management. Okay, not for you, because you know, this is where your kids grew up and you're so emotionally attached to this property, you would never be able to sleep at night. Option two would be, let's sell this puppy. No, you know, I'm upside down and we just refinanced. Okay, well, let's talk about option three, because you're so upside down. We take over the payments. We take over the existing loan and we rent the property. You know, we would keep it in our inventory. We'd rent it just like anybody else. And then we make the payments on your behalf to your bank. And so this is kind of how that works in a nutshell. But talking through some of the ways to do the techniques is, you know, we did set up our own separate LLC just for those. And I'm using a series LLC, which could be smart. It could not be smart. I don't want to debate that here, because I don't think there is a right or wrong, but it was only a couple hundred dollars to do a series. So what that means is I have X LLC, and I don't want to say the name, and then series one is a home. Series two under X LLC is another home. And you could have unlimited number of series under the same LLC, which eliminates you from having to pay $1,200 or $1,000 to set up an LLC for every single home. So you can see the merit. And you can also make the argument, don't even do that at all, right?
Well, yes. I mean, there are different strategies. An LLC or some sort of type of entity is done more for risk mitigation, okay? Because as we know, as property managers, we're in a very litigious type of business. And so if we're going to be holding a property and having tenants in there, there's always that risk that you can get sued. Well, if they're suing on that property and that property is in a separate entity, they and I'm not going to get into following corporate formalities and all those type of things that you need to be doing properly. But if it's in an entity, they can only go after the assets in that entity.
Correct.
Okay. Now, you're setting up a series because it in essence is setting up separate entities within that series, okay? And so you're protecting yourself. Another strategy that people are doing, and I've done a lot of, are trusts. You know, so you're putting a property into a separate trust. Either it's a land trust, for example, or a personal trust, things like that.
I like those as well. And to be clear for the audience is, I go to an attorney, I set up the LLC, and then that attorney nurses the LLC for me. So all the LLCs we've set up, and I think we have six or eight or whatever, with all the businesses and everything else, that attorney does all the corporate minutes, does everything every year. So I want to make that point clear to everybody out there. Don't necessarily just go to LegalZoom, for example, pay, you know, $100, $800, whatever it's going to be, and set up an LLC, because if you forget to do minutes, if you forget to do a corporate filing, if you forget to do something, well, now the LLC is voided almost practically, because it's pierceable. So you can get right through it. So I always go to a trusted attorney. So getting past that, one of the other techniques is, once you have an LLC, you can open a bank account. And with a bank account, we've made it to where the automatic payments come from the business, the management company, let's say, because we're collecting rents. That goes to that LLC, you know, that X LLC we talked about. And then the payments are made to the third party, and the third party makes the payments to the owner's lender on their behalf. So I've automated that process to where if we have to chip in, we chip in. If we have profits, we have profits. If there's a maintenance deal, we chip in. So that way we can continue to scale that up. And then I would even recommend to go as far as having a bookkeeper monitor those for you. Because if you're trying to build a business, but you're turning back and looking at all the rentals you're trying to manage for your own personal portfolio, it gets a little tedious. So I'd recommend ensuring that you have some sort of good bookkeeping solution for that.
Yeah. And to tag on to that, the important part is the separation. You can't be commingling your personal with
forgot to mention that's why we do that.
And that's why you do it. And it's really important. So if you're having your own investment properties, yes, you can have your property management company manage those properties, and that's fine. However, all the finances, can't be commingled with your other trust funds. And so having the ability, setting up a separate bank account, and I would say not just the bank account, but a securities deposit account. So you're keeping that separate as well. So all of your properties that you're holding, you're keeping those rent amounts in a bank account and the security deposits, because it's the tenant's funds, into another escrow account, a security deposit account. That's separate from your typical owners.
Well, I mean, that's debatable depending on the state.
I don't think so.
Well, I've gone into that. So here we are in a disagreement. We're about ready to get in a fist fight. I don't know if necessarily you have to separate that out of your company escrow trust account. I'm probably thinking you're right because you're super analytical like that. The other thing that I want to make sure that you do is I've gone through the tax research on this. Charge management fees. Is charge your home a management fee.
Yeah.
You know, because the tax is going that way, the tax reduction going that way is better than keeping that fund, keeping that income and having it taxed as a rental proceed income. So best, definitely hide or not hide. It's just you're not trying to hide it. You're disclosing it fully on a different method.
Well, to that point, Brad, I mean, it's not just so you can have some more income. It's for the risk factor of things as well, because you want to be treating this like a business. Okay. So if your business for properties was going to have your management company manage it, and you wouldn't just say, okay, manage the properties and here you go. If it was a separate entity, you would say, well, here's a management agreement. Here are all the terms. Now, you can have lower terms. You could have a lower management fees and other things
and
that you're charging. But you should have a management agreement for every property you're buying and holding.
That's
a good point,
too.
That you're having your management company manage.
That's a very good point. I do appreciate that. And let's not forget, too, that people can do this with an owner-financed home. This exact scenario, because we're talking banks and we're talking subject twos. Well, don't forget, the owners that own their home outright, which I have done, is they can play the bank. You can approach them and say, well, here's an interest term I'm willing to propose to you. Here's a balloon payment we can do in 10 years, for example, if you really think you're only going to own it for 10 years. There's all kinds of terms you can throw in there to get an owner that owns a home outright to sell you that home under owner financing, which
that's exactly right.
It's a great way to do it.
And that was the other part of it, where I said they may own the property free and clear. And so now you're just doing terms, and they're the bank. They're selling it to you typically on a contract for deed, because they're not going to give you the deed. I mean, so it'll be a contract for deed. They're doing owner financing. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's love it. Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't do that all day long, because there's no closing costs involved. You can pay a higher interest rate and not feel bad, because when you do a traditional financing, I'm thinking the general amount of upfront headache that you got to pay for is what, 6-7%? Because you got a 1% origination fee, you got all these escrow fees you got to put down, you have points you got to pay for. I mean, let's call it 3-5%. The cost of the money is 3-5% on a $200,000 home.
And it could even be more if you're going with a private lender.
Yes. So think of that money on a $200,000 home at, let's say, 3%, that's $6,000. Right? That's a lot to put down as the cost of money, using air quotes, versus an owner financing deal. That $6,000 cost of money might go down to $500 in like attorney's fees. Yeah. So it's actually a very good thing to do. And it makes you feel good about pay a bit more higher of an interest rate.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so you're working on the terms, especially with owner finance type of properties, where they're willing to do that with you. I mean, you can give them price as long as you get terms on the financing.
This has been great. Let's talk a little bit, so we can kind of wrap some of this up, the tax benefits, so everybody understands why they should own rental properties, because management company owners may often get blinded on why they should own rental properties on behalf of tax purposes.
Yeah. Well, before we get into that, if you don't mind, let's just go through just a few other examples of ways of doing it. I mean, and we're not going to get into the details, but the buying it is just one thing. There might be owners that are saying, I really don't want to. I mean, you can have some other options. You can master lease the property. Kind of do a sandwich leasing where you're actually, so
that
now
term,
you,
that term sandwich leasing is so interesting. I've never heard that. I had to bring it up again. Sandwich leasing is master leasing. Now we could literally talk a whole nother podcast on master leasing.
Oh my goodness. And a good friend of mine, Dave Tilney, teaches it.
So, plus
right. So those listening, look up David Tilney. He does these hassle-free property management classes probably a couple times a year, and go to that and you'll learn a lot about master leasing.
Yeah. It's more than we can touch on here because it's
oh my goodness.
Extensive.
Oh yeah. He goes into it for,
yeah, and he just had a class, I think last fall, and I looked at it. It's like, oh, darn it, I can't go to that. I'm busy, but I definitely want to go to that and learn from
it's
him.
It's very worthwhile, okay?
Excellent.
So that's one option. The other option is just controlling the property because the owner may not want to sell right now, but you can option it or like lease option it. So you're leasing it or master leasing it. So you're leasing it with the option to buy.
Or sell.
Well, if you have the option to buy it, you have then the option to sell it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Okay, so you're buying it from the owner.
Almost the option to wholesale it.
Well, it really depends on how you structure it.
But if you control it, the
purpose is to control it. That's right. And so you're getting that option. You're leasing it from them with the option to buy. Now, I also have an option where I will lease option it for them. So they may not want it to do this. I'll say, well, look, how about if I lease option it for you and we split the deal. You know, so now I'm coordinating the whole thing, but I'm getting half of that upside. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's a good option for them as well.
Lot to chew on there, isn't it?
Lot to chew on. And then getting back into once you have it, if you're buying the property, even buying it subject to, and then going around and doing a option with your tenant as a tenant buyer.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
And so now you're doing most people would probably hear a rent to own. That type of concept.
Yes.
And so now you're renting the property to them with the option for them to buy it. And there's a whole process, and we could do a whole nother podcast on that alone.
Same with the tax benefits, but I just want to touch on two things real quick. I mean, less than a few minutes. Do not forget depreciation. The magic of that is just phenomenal because as a management company owner, you are self-employed, your LLC proceeds pass through into your personal tax return. And when you start talking about rental proceeds and depreciation coming off of your tax return, that could take you from a 28% down to a 15% taxable amount. And all that is just free magic, in the air money, pixie dust, depreciation.
Right. Well, Brad, I mean, property managers should be doing this anyway when they're meeting with a new client, because most clients are not sophisticated investors. They're usually reluctant landlords. They really don't understand. All they understand is cash flow. Well, cash flow is only one of the potential benefits of having an investment property. Depreciation, as you mentioned, is huge. The equity pay down or the buildup from paying down on the mortgage can be huge, depending on if you're buying the property, as I mentioned just a little while ago. If you're buying a property that's already 5-10 years into that loan, you're taking on that payment, that principal reduction is growing every single month. And it can be huge. I have some right now that are almost $800 a month of principal reduction because that loan has been paid down so long.
Wow.
So that's a huge benefit. And then, of course, the gravy would be appreciation. So if you're looking at all four of those benefits of having an investment property, it can be pretty significant, even in a negative cash flow situation.
Yeah. And people look at the cash flow maybe as all-encompassing, but it's not. Because I'm sure you've owned several. I have several that are not cash flowing, but the tax benefits far outweigh it. And I know eventually the appreciation will catch up. It's like a sideways pyramid. The appreciation goes up, the amount you owe goes down, and the spread just keeps getting bigger the longer you hold it.
So if you're buying to your taxes, if you're buying a property, say subject to taking on their payments, you're getting not only the depreciation, okay, and you can even negotiate that with that seller, okay, depending on what their needs are.
Okay.
So, but it's not only the depreciation that you're getting that interest write-off.
And the property taxes and everything else.
And everything else. So yeah, that's right.
People understand that. They get the full tax benefits of doing it that way. All right. So let's kind of wrap this up a little bit. And we want to make the audience understand, you know, you're not a guru. You're not out teaching this stuff. You're not selling a book. You have no angle here other than just to have a friendly conversation with us. If you're going to make any recommendations to somebody about going out and finding more information about how to do some of the things, do you have a good place to start?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of books and things out there, and you never know. And I've gone to so many different seminars over the years. I've spent six figures on education, mm-hmm. On this type of stuff. A gentleman from Atlanta, Lou Brown, was really a big influence for me.
Lou Brown,
okay. In Atlanta. And he continues to do trainings.
Okay. Another good source may be Bigger Pockets.
Bigger Pockets is online.
I think it's online, and there's a phenomenal amount of resource there. I would encourage all property management company owners to subscribe to Bigger Pockets, get on there, and start reading. I mean, they have so many good calculators. They have so many awesome things on there. I'm very impressed with that, and they put out a very good podcast show as well. So I think that's a great resource. And I would recommend people going there. And obviously just the Google, the Amazons, dig into more information. David Tilney would be another one to attend one of his seminars to learn master leasing.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of connections through there too. There's a whole, it used to be Jack Miller, who was another
Jack Miller
guru. And I think really the father of it all. Jack, I went to a lot of his trainings, and unfortunately he's deceased, but there are still a lot of his so-called disciples, I guess, that are out teaching different types of classes.
So I don't need to go find one of those gurus on TV and pay them $50,000
to give me
a bus tour?
No.
What do you mean?
There are still those type of things out there, but by actual professionals doing it. They're doing it themselves. And those are the guys you really want to get
connected with. I'm always amazed to see the people that complain where they go and give $50,000 to these investment gurus for a bus tour, and they come back and they mass sue because they didn't get anything out of it. It's like, duh. I mean, what are you doing? But anyway, let's wrap this up, Dave. This has been a great conversation you and I have had about investing for property managers. I think this is going to be well sought after to listen for it. I wanted to thank you real quickly for coming on. And do you have any last minute comments?
I do. They need to start. Property managers need to start. And I would say start with your current owners.
Well said.
All right. So it's, you already know them. They already have rapport and relationship of trust with them. They would be the first ones that I went after, and just not waiting until they're ready to, that they come to you and say, I'm selling my property, because by then they've already typically made a decision or have a realtor already. Send out the notices now to say, hey, look, if you're ever looking to be selling in the future, I do buy properties. I buy properties for the same amount that you would net listing and selling traditionally. So before you're going to sell, give me a call and we can talk about it.
Great point. Great point to end on. Dave, once again, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Brad.
Today's show has been sponsored by Virtually Incredible, providing tenant screening services, call center services, and video production services to property managers. You may also visit them at virtuallyincredible.com.
This has been a podcast episode by propertymanagementproductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.